morning again. I do have to say, I picked the music for communion, but it's kind of a random thing, and so I was a little, it was different for communion this morning, wasn't it? Which is, I think that's good and nice, so I was just surprised a little bit personally, too, so. But just doing things different. I want to thank Lynette for stepping in. She's done a wonderful job, so I think that that's great that we have that talent and she's willing to use it, so I want to point that out. And again, there's lots of other people stepping up and doing lots of neat things, too, on a regular basis, but I wanted to make that as well. So, if I haven't met you, I think I know everybody, but I thought I'd say this again this morning. My name's Matthew Theiner. I'm blessed to be the pastor here at Astoria Christian Church. It's just good to say that once in a while, I think. So, again, I think I know everybody, but if I haven't chatted with you a whole lot, then I'd love to do that. I'd love to spend some time with you guys. So, as we start this morning, I just want to say there's another sermon here I could do, because the first service, my mic wasn't working, so I had to stand still. And I felt really constricted and almost oppressed to have to stand perfectly still. And so I think that's another sermon for another day. But I just thought I'd throw that out there, that I'm going to be moving again, as fortunately for some of you. I know that's not the best thing. But I thought about going that route this morning, but we won't. So I don't know if you guys have Netflix. If anybody streams Netflix, it's that online streaming service that you can sign up for, and you can watch whatever you want, whenever you want to, kind of an idea. But last December, Netflix has been producing their own shows, and they came out with this documentary called Making a Murderer. I don't know if you've heard of it, or if you've seen it, or if you've interacted with it at all, but we didn't have Netflix at the time, but I heard so much about it through Facebook, through other people, and it was right up my alley for what it was and how it presented it and all these kind of things, and so I was really excited to see it. And so finally, over the last couple weeks, I just think about my life and the schedule. I don't know how we fit this in. But over the last couple weeks, we got Netflix, and it's 10 hour-long or about hour-long episodes, and we finished it in 4 days. And so I feel pretty good about that in a lot of ways. My wife and I sat, and we finished it pretty quick. It's one of those shows where you watch it, and you just watch the next one because it's so good, and you just, anyway, I'm surprised it actually took us 4 days. So we did need to sleep. But we finished it pretty quickly. It's like I said, it's just a fascinating look at this process that's involved with it. And I really struggled trying to come up with a synopsis, for those of you that haven't heard of it, to try to explain it without giving anything away, because if you guys want to go back and watch it, I don't want to ruin it too much for anybody. It's hard to explain exactly what happens without telling you too much about it. But the whole process, the whole series, to me, was both really fascinating, I just wanted to keep watching, but it was also really frustrating. Because of just what happened and how things fell and the decisions that were made and the processes and how it was handled. And so there's a certain amount of frustration I had with it as well. But the idea behind Making a Murderer is there's this gentleman named Stephen Avery. And Stephen Avery has had trouble with the law in several situations, several instances. In some ways, the law had trouble with him. And there's just this whole process, this whole legal proceeding that happens. And really, 4 to 5 of almost entire episodes are just the trials that he's involved with. So almost half of the series is really just videotape of the trials. There's some information plugged here and there. But it's just so much of the legal process. And I'm fascinated by the legal process, how things are handled, how things run. You know, you get taught in school, this is how the process is. But how that works in real life, I think, is a lot different than what you really get taught in school. You know, the principles might be the same, but the practice usually looks a little different. But that legal process to me is fascinating. And especially, I think, especially the human side of it. Because you can have the perfect structure, the perfect system, the perfect setup for how things are supposed to happen. But then we get involved, the humans get involved, and it doesn't work like it's supposed to. Right? There's human error in the processing and the gathering of evidence. There's human error as far as the defense bringing certain topics up, the prosecution bringing certain things up, the jury has to vote and be final about a decision, and there's just so much humanness in it that it's a little frustrating to watch a real-life documentary that's happened in Wisconsin with Stephen Avery and this whole thing, and it can be frustrating. It's kind of nice when you watch like a show like CSI, if anybody watches CSI, or Law & Order, where at the end of the show, they always confess, right? That's just nice and reassuring. You know they did it, right? There's a confession. They say they did it. They get caught, and everything happens, and you know everything's final, and you have resolution. You can go to sleep, and you get a good night's sleep that night. When you watch something like this, And you don't have that clarity. You don't have that resolution necessarily, because it's human. You don't know for sure where the truth is. You can have all this evidence, and you can have all these facts that you think are facts, but there's so much humanness that you wonder if that's actually how things fall. And so there's a struggle there, but there's also a captivating element to it as well in that whole process. And so I want you to kind of keep that legal process in your mind. I'll reference back to Stephen Avery's story here in Making a Murderer a little bit here later. But we're beginning a new series called Address This Mess. Address This Mess. And I'm really excited about this series. I think it'll be really neat to look at our messes, to look at our lives, and how that fits over the next few weeks. And about through Labor Day, this is just kind of scheduling stuff, so I don't know if you care about this or not, but I'll let you know. For the next like 4 weeks, I think we're doing this. We'll do this series, have a couple weeks where we'll do something a little different. Then we have our community service after homecoming. We'll have our community service here at the square that we'll all be involved with and being over there for. So just as far as scheduling, kind of keep that in mind a little bit. But this series of addressing this mess, it's really looking at our lives, our situations, our circumstances. And there are all of us have places or situations, people, circumstances, areas that we have messes in. Maybe you look at your life and you think your whole life is a mess. Right, I think sometimes I find myself in that situation where there's a relationship, a friend, a parent, a sibling, a child, where that relationship just seems a little messy, or at work, and that interaction with that coworker, or that there's circumstances, personalities that just seemed a little messy. Or maybe it's with at home, with our kids. At my house, it feels like it's almost always literally a mess, right? There's always toys or something strewn about. And toys bother me enough, but I think it's the clothes that bother me the most, right? How is there a shirt randomly in the middle of the living room? Why is that there? I don't understand that. But, you know, anyway, I have boys, so they take off their shirts randomly, I suppose. But, you know, there's just a literal mess sometimes, too. But those relationships between our kids, or maybe it's a relationship with our spouses. Our marriage feels a little messy. And for ladies, I'm just going to pick on you just for a second. When we got married, I don't know if this happened for you, but did you have a bunch of people, maybe his ex-girlfriends or your mom, say, he's a mess, right? Stay away from him, he's a mess. Don't raise your hand. You don't want to admit to that, right? But maybe you got told he was a mess and to not get into the mess, and you know, we decide to marry him anyway, and you find out, well, he is a mess, but I'll fix him, right? I'll fix him. We don't say that, right? No. Albert Einstein, I love this quote. Albert Einstein said, and I don't know why it was Albert Einstein, but it seems odd, but he says, men marry women with the hope that they will never change, right? Men marry women hoping they'll never change, but women marry men hoping that they will change, and obviously both end up being rather disappointed, I think, most situations. And so, anyway, I don't know where that was going. But, you know, this idea of marriages can be messy, right? And sorry I picked on the gals this morning. Guys have, as you know, we are the messes usually. So we have those relationship struggles, those messes. But the good news is there is always someone whose life is a bigger mess than yours. I'm glad some of you laughed anyway, because that was supposed to be, right? That may be true. There may be some truth that there's always someone has a bigger mess than us. But I don't think that's necessarily very helpful. What is true, what is helpful, I think, is that the good news is it's not just you. It's not just me. Ultimately, we know that mess is what brings us together. Ultimately, mess is what brings us together today. When we look around this room, and don't look because it's awkward to look backwards and stuff in church. We get told not to do that. And so, but if you looked around and you glanced at people, you'd see that there are messes all around, right? You look up here, and I'll pick on myself, you see a mess. I promise you, there's a mess up on the stage here right now. And I look at you, and I could say the same thing. So, you know, there's messes all around us. And there, we just have that in our lives. Mess is what brings us together. We look nice, you know, we dress up nice. I still wear a tie because I just think it looks so nice. I like my tie. I should wear it every day, but I don't. So, but you know, we dress up nice, we look nice, we come to church, we put on all this air, and we look the right part, we look like we've got everything together, but we know as we go home, as things happen during our week, there's a mess. I was actually talking, oh, excuse me, just a second. one thing about our messes is that the more we understand about someone's mess, right? We can see a mess, we can look at a mess, and we can see what's going on in their life. The more we look at their mess, the more we tend to have a natural reaction of, oh, right? Yeah, why, you know, you can see, oh, that's why they're in their mess. They did all this stuff, and they're in that mess. But when we start to hear a story, and I found this true in my life, especially, the more I hear the story of how things happened, of why they made the choices they made, I can understand a little bit more. I have a little bit more compassion, a little more understanding of why they're in that mess. I was actually talking to a pastor this week, a fellow pastor, and we were looking at, we had both kind of interacted with a third pastor fairly recently, and we're talking about some of the situations that he found himself in. And we were discussing and sharing, and you know, kind of our experience with him and the things that he was dealing with and struggling with, and we both kind of came to certain conclusions. But my natural reaction when talking to this pastor would have been, a few years ago, would have been, well, he made those choices, he did those things, he deserves kind of to be there. But I found myself more lately, and this week when I was talking to this pastor about him, I found myself saying, you know what, I could end up like him. I could make similar choices. I could see why he'd choose certain things. If things happened to me the same way, if circumstances fell the same way, I could make similar choices and just be in the same position he is. And so I understand the story. I understand where he's coming from, especially as a pastor, why he could maybe end up there. And so I can see the mess. I can see, but I also know that there's mess in my life. I don't have any right to point fingers or to criticize or to judge. And ultimately, we know, though, in all of our messes that we cannot get out on our own. Right? We cannot get out on our own. It's kind of like, I don't know if you've had roommates in college or different times in your life, if you ever had a roommate. Once that roommate's name is on that lease, it is so hard to get rid of them. Not that you always want to, but if you have a bad roommate and they're on the lease with you, you can't get rid of them. Right? You can make their life as miserable as you can. Maybe that would help. I don't know. But they're there and they're stuck. You bring them in, you invite them into your home, you live together, expecting things to go well. But if things don't, there's not a whole lot you can do with it. And that's the same with our messes. We bring them into our hearts, we bring them into our lives, we bring them into our houses. We live with them for a while, and we have no power to get rid of them. And so for those of us that would say we're followers of Christ, those are that have a relationship with Christ, that call ourselves Christians, we believe that ultimately the mess that brings us together is the mess that brought God near. The mess that brings us together is the mess that brought God near. Because of this mess, it affects us all, and we can't get rid of it on our own. We needed to have someone who had a power and who had the authority to remove that mess for us. We needed to appeal to a higher court. And one of the cool things about the court system, our processes here, is that there seems to be always another court to appeal to. You go up and up and up, and finally there's, you know, I don't know if the top one is, in my mind, is the federal Supreme Court. I don't know if that's true or not. But, you know, you get to the end, and then after that you can't do anymore. Well, we have to appeal to the supreme of the supreme courts, the highest level of supreme courts, in order to get ourselves out of this mess. And the idea behind that comes through something that Christians believe. Another thing that's true for those of us that follow Christ is that there is that mess. When we look at that mess, when we look at the things around us, it's a lens. That mess is a lens. And it's a mess that when we look through it, when we see through it, we begin to see our way out of the mess. We begin to see our way out of the mess. And when we recognize that we're in a mess, we can make those steps to move forward. Because the mess is a lens through which we can discover God. And this morning, I think a lot of us would say that you know, we don't need to, you know, we have God, we know who God is, we don't need to discover God, but our world does. Our world is so in need of discovering God, and one of the steps, one of the primary ways that we begin to discover God is to begin to see that mess. To see that mess is, we can't get rid of it on our own, we can't evict it on our own, and so we need to find a way out. So that brings us to our passage this morning in Romans. From Romans chapter 3. And Paul was a man, the author of Romans is Paul. And Paul was a man who was steeped in mess, especially when his name was Saul before it was changed to Paul. Steeped in mess, doing all sorts of things, all sorts of atrocities towards others, especially towards Christians. He thought of them as an abomination to the Jewish faith, kind of this offshoot that wasn't supposed to be around, so he was persecuting, he was killing those that were following what was called the Way, or the early Christians at the time. And so Paul was steeped in that mess. And it took him looking through that lens of that mess. Really, it took Jesus himself coming on the Damascus Road, shining a blinding light on him, directly telling him that he needs to do something different. "Why are you treating my people this way?" Jesus asked on that road. And through that process and the days that followed, Paul is able to look at the mess, see the choices he's making, see the decisions he's making, and come out of that mess by looking at who God is and what Jesus is calling him to. And so he understands messes. And so we hear, see in Romans 3, verses 19, some of the things he has to say about that mess. And before we start reading here, just quickly, 19 kind of sums up what's been happening. He's making this argument. Romans is this big, long, really it seems like a continual argument he kind of seems to keep making throughout there about of who Christ is, what Christ has done, and the mess that we find ourselves in. And right here in verse 19, he sums up all of these quotes. If you have your Bible, you can see all the indented area there from about 10 through 18. And he sums up all of these quotes that Paul is using from the Old Testament. And how he's saying here in verse 19, summing it all up, he says, "Now we know that whatever the law says, it says to those who are under the law, so that every mouth may be silenced and the whole world held accountable to God." Paul says, though the law says to those under the law. And when he's talking about law, his first context, his first reference is back to the Old Testament, right? We have the Ten Commandments. We have 600-plus laws that God gave his people, the Israelites. And so when Paul mentions law and his audience is primarily Jewish, they would have thought of the Old Testament Mosaic law. Thou shalt not, and all of the lists that goes on to that. And so there's that primary law, but there's also a Gentile audience that's reading this. And we're Gentiles as well reading this. And so the law for the Mosaic law is different for Jews or for Gentiles. And so he references the law that we look to. And if we jump back to Romans 2, 14 and 15, I don't have them on the screen, I'm not going to read them. But in 2, 14 and 15, he says that the Gentiles' law is their law of conscience. Their law of conscience. Right? It's what we say all the time. You know, I really should stop, you know, eating that third bowl of ice cream before I go to bed, for example. Or, you know, I know I ought to exercise. I should get up and get going and you know, work out a little bit. Or, you know, I ought to start, you know, spending more time with my kids. Or, you know, all these different shoulds and oughts are really not necessarily God's law of the Old Testament, but they're our conscience. They're a law, a standard that each one of us has kind of put on ourselves. We've set up and we've said, I'm going to do this, or I should do this. There's a certain standard. And that standard, I don't think there's a single one of us. If you don't ever say, I should or I ought, maybe you do keep your standard. But I don't think there's a single one of us that can keep that standard. I can keep our own standard of what conscience is. And even when we're interacting with people, right? We have a conflict or a fight with somebody, or someone criticizes us for something, and they come to us and they say, well, you should have done this, or you should have done that, or they have something that we should have done, right? Or back in school, you know, you turn in a paper late, or you bring home a report card that says, you know, a few C's and a couple D's kind of a thing. And they say, and they criticize, and they attack, and they question, well, why is it like this? How did this happen? And what do you say? Well, nobody's perfect, right? Nobody's perfect, right? I usually get A's and B's, and I usually turn my paper in on time, but, you know, nobody's perfect. And we say that, you know, here. We say that in our culture. And what that says, what that really is saying, is that there's a perfect out there. There's this perfect image, there's perfect whatever out there, and we just can't keep up with it, right? None of us attain to it. But there's a perfect out there, and we just cannot get to it. And so Paul then tells us, that if we understand that there's a law, whether it's our own standard, our own law, or the Old Testament God's law, there's that law up there, and when we realize that we're falling short of it, what does Paul tell us we need to do or should do? The Holman Christian Standard Bible, I think, says it well. It says, every mouth should be shut. I just think it sounds good. Anyway, right? The translation we use says the world will be silent. Every mouth may be silenced. When we realize we've fallen short, when we realize we haven't done what we even said we should do, our response should be silence. Not excuses, not reasons, not buts. Right? Just silence. It's interesting, in the Making a Murderer series that we watched, Stephen Avery, the defendant, continually, regularly claimed his innocence. Constantly would claim his innocence. He never took a plea deal, and the plea deals that, you know, you take a lesser charge for less time and all these different kinds of things. He never took a plea deal. He allowed himself to go through the court process continuing to claim his innocence. And so we usually do that too. We claim our innocence. We claim that we've done everything that we could do or should do. We said we did our best. Or nobody's perfect. And so we continue to defend ourselves, to fight for our innocence. And Paul tells us every mouth should be silenced. Paul continues here in verse 20. He says, therefore, no one will be declared righteous in God's sight by the works of the law, right? Put right before God by the works of the law. Rather, through the law we become conscious. I cannot do that word. Conscious of sin. All right, we're going to keep moving on. You guys got it. All right, we become aware of our sin. We understand our sin. We should be silenced. When we fall short of our standard or God's, especially God's standard, but we also know that even if we are able to keep that law perfectly, even if we do everything that we think we should, even if we do everything that we think that our spouse tells us we should do, or our kids tell us we should do, or our parents tell us we should do, or God tells us we should do, even if we could do all of those things perfectly, Paul's saying we can't get what we want anyway. We're not getting to where we want to be, which is right before God, righteous before God, which means we're just connected with Him. We're true before Him. Even perfect compliance, complete compliance, isn't sufficient. So then, even if we could keep that standard, we're not going to get what we want or ultimately what we need. It's kind of like if we were standing in our legal proceedings and we were on trial for something, we come before the judge, and even if we did everything perfectly, even if we were innocent, even if we followed everything just the right way, every time we go to that judge, we're going to be convicted. We're going to be found guilty because we just cannot get to where we want to go by keeping those standards, by doing those things. So Paul tells us in verses 21 and 22, but apart from the law, the righteousness being connected with God has been made known, to which the law and the prophets, all of the Old Testament, testify. And this righteousness, this right relationship with God, is given through faith in Jesus Christ to all who believe. Paul here is telling us that separate from those standards, separate from the I should do this or I ought to do this or even God's thou shall not, separate from all of that, something else happened. Something else was done. All of the Old Testament, the laws and the prophets, points to, really testifies, like in a court case, as a witness, points to an answer out of our mess. And that answer is faith in Jesus Christ, especially looking at the power of His death and the power of His resurrection. Separate from the mess, it gives us an image of what an on mess looks like. What an on mess looks like, and gives us that image separate from all that. And it's kind of like when my kids, they were at public school all last year, and I'm really excited for them to go back. I didn't think I'd be this excited, but I am. And so, ready for them to go back. But one thing that they learned from school, one thing that they gained from school that I noticed after being homeschooled and being at home most of their lives, is that they begin to see how things are different. They see it, you know, a certain way. We have kind of a structure. We have an organization at home. They start to see, well, the school does a little differently, and you know, they have different rules and structures and stuff, and that's great. But what I get back that I struggle with a little bit is when they see their classmates and their friends have a different standard, or their parents, their friends and you know, classmates' parents have a different standard than we have at home. And so you get things like, well, Tommy gets to stay up late, right? Or everybody in class has one. I have to have one. Everybody in class has one, right? And they're not even in middle school yet, so I'm really concerned. And I understand that girls are a little harder in middle school, but that's just what I've heard. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. But was that maybe that was too far? All right. You know, they get a different perspective. They get a different focus. They get a different mentality that, well, that other parents do differently than our parents do, and so there's a conflict there. There's a difference there. And that's, you know, some of those things are positive. They see something positive in their friends' parents that they want at home, which I think is great. A lot of it seems to be that, well, it's just not fair, and, you know, that sometimes it'd be kind of negative. But at the same time, they start to see it differently. And that's really what's happening here, too, is that we need to start seeing our mess differently because there is an on mess. Because there is a way out, because there is a situation where it's different outside of our circumstances and our situation. And so we begin to look and we begin to strive for that. But Paul reminds us here as we finish up here in Romans verse 23, most of us know this verse pretty well. In Romans 3:23, Paul sums up here and says, you know what? All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. None of us get it perfectly right. We all fall short of our own standard, much less the standard of God or the standard of our community or our school or our spouse or husband or wife, a parent or kids. We just can't meet up with all those standards. We've all fallen short. And so with that, we begin to see the mess. Begin to see the garbage piling up around us. And what that does, though, is it begins to point us to an answer. Awareness of our messes awakens us to something outside of ourselves to which we are accountable. Awareness of our mess points us to something or awakens us to something outside of ourselves to which we are accountable. Because we begin to see our mess, we begin to see something outside of our mess that really ultimately we probably want. We want to move beyond our mess, beyond what's going on around us, and we're just inches away, we're just steps away, we're just you know, almost a phone call away. I don't know if that's the right phrase, but we're just a step away from acknowledging God. Once we see our mess, we begin to see and acknowledge God. All the 12-step programs, AA, the Celebrate Recovery that I was a part of, all point to the fact that we need to understand that we're in a mess to be able to get anything at all. That we're in a mess, that we're stuck, that things aren't going right, that we can't get out of it on our own. And once we are willing to admit that, we can begin to make the steps forward. And so this morning, I don't have any other of those steps. So yeah, you're on your own for this week anyway. But the rest of this series is going to be talking about what are some of those practical steps. What are some of those things moving forward that we can do to step out of our mess. First, we acknowledge that there is a mess, that there's an on mess that we want to get to, that we're accountable to something outside of ourselves. And then we go from there. But two things I want to leave us with, and then one real simple practical thing to close us this morning I want to do. But two things I want to point out with. First is that we need to acknowledge our mess. Acknowledge our mess. And when we acknowledge that mess, we begin to acknowledge God. I know most of us this morning are fine with acknowledging God. We don't have a problem with that. But the more and more we see the mess, the more and more we see our own filth and garbage, the more and more we begin to realize how much we need God. And we can all do that. We can all do that more and better. I can do that more and better. So first, we acknowledge and see our mess. And the second thing to remember is that we all have something in common. no matter age, no matter race, no matter ethnicity, no matter what choices we've made, we are all messes. And so our messes, looking at our messes, our attitude, our mentality, our focus should be on community, not criticism, grace, and not judgment. And so the moral of the story is we all have something in common. And so as we wrap up this morning, as you guys head home this week, I want to challenge you to do one simple thing. I think it's pretty simple. Is we're gonna practice a phrase. It's already up there for you. We're gonna practice a phrase, and so when you see a mess, when you go to work tomorrow morning and that guy that comes in that you just is always a mess, right? You know who I'm talking about. Maybe you don't. But anyway, there's a guy, and you know, imagine you're at work and there's a guy and he's just always a mess, and he's actually telling everybody, all his buddies, about the mess he just had this weekend. Right? And so you see this mess, and when we interact with this mess, my initial reaction, my initial go-to response is always pretty negative. And so I don't know what yours is, but I encourage us, I encourage myself, I want you to challenge me this week even, to say this when we see that mess. Don't say it to their face, but say it kind of under your breath, maybe. We won't go there. So say under your breath or in your mind or something like that, this idea of when we see a mess, or you know a mess, I know a mess when I see a mess because I am one. I know a mess when I see one because I am one. I know a mess when I see one because I am one. Let's try that together just so you have a little practice, right? I know a mess when I see one because I am one. Good. You guys got this. We're set to go. All right. So when you see that this week, when we see that and interact with that this week, imagine that, and so when you come and talk to me and I hear you mumble something under your breath, I won't ask you what you said. So we'll go from there. But, you know, this idea of can we do that? Can we express that? Can we interact with that to be able to have an attitude towards we're all in this together? I know a mess when I see one because I am. Let's pray. Gracious Father, we thank you so much that we do have that in common. Not that we're in the mess, but that we have communion, we have community, we have connection because we're all in this together. We are brought together by that mess, and you are brought near because of that mess. And we thank you so much for that. Guide us, direct us, help us to use this as a way to connect with others this week. Pray this all in Jesus' name. Amen. And so as we close this morning, given an opportunity for anyone to respond, if there's prayer, if there's anything that anyone needs to talk about or to share, or even if we need to take that initial step of receiving Christ, we're going to stand, we're going to sing our invitation song, and I encourage you to come forward this morning. So let's stand.